Growing the Game podcast brought to you by one of our great sponsors, Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want a perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. 2330 7th Avenue is where they're located in Regina. Joining me on the phone, one of our analysts from the Rough Rider Radio Network and three-time Grey Cup champ, Paul Waldo. Paul, if they want to get in the real estate game, how do they get a hold of you, my friend?
Ballsy, they can call me at 306-502-5355, or they can reach me at paul@homesregina.ca.
All right, so the weather's turned finally, and we're feeling yes. Football. The Riders just had their mini camp. Looks like they're, from all accounts, looks like an open competition at quarterback. That's what Rod Peterson's reporting. I got to think, though, with the hefty contract, it's Zach Kolaris' job to lose.
They always say the money talks.
Yeah.
The money talks. I mean, you know, with the $350,000 contract or whatever it was that they paid him and broke him off with, and I would like to go ahead and say that he would be the anointed quarterback as of right now. With that being said, though, I think that, you know, they definitely have arguably the best insurance policy in the league right now. I think with a kid that's young and upcoming, you know, you look at a lot of different quarterbacks that are around the league that are, like, essentially backups for insurance policies, and they're guys who've been around and have experience. But, you know, I don't think there are any quarterbacks that have the juice to fill in and go in there and do something long term just in case things don't pan out with Zach.
Where do you see the weakness on this team? They look pretty good in the receiving core. They look good at the running back spot. To me, they're a little thin at the D-line, or at the defensive backs, pardon me. And, you know, maybe that linebacking core. You know, Sam Hurl's a good player. I don't know that he's Enoch Mwamba, but once you give the quarterback big money, the two quarterbacks big money, you got to cut other ways. Where do you see kind of where they got to shore things up here?
You know, I'd probably say in the linebacking core, and obviously, you know, Sammy Harrell's a good player who's been around the league for a while, hasn't been known as a bona fide starter. I know I think he started about 13 games last year. He's kind of been that rotational starter, and I think you know, you look at Big Willie and with Charleston Hughes on the end and guys like Zach Evans on the inside. You know, they're looking good on that defensive line in the front. It's probably as good as it is around the league. And in the back end, obviously, with bringing in Oju at the boundary corner, which was a great sign. And they're going to have a veteran crew back there, obviously, with guys like Ed Gainey and Javon Johnson and company. And the receiving core is stacked. They got two really good quarterbacks that can play football. And they have an abundance of guys to run the ball for them. So I would probably agree with you. And I have to say it's probably that middle linebacking core, but once again, you know, you get some guys up front that can play, a guy like Zach Evans that can really do what he does in terms of eating up double teams and making the job probably easier for the guy behind him. So that would probably be the focus, I think, is that middle linebacking core. But there isn't a lot of loose ends on that team. I think, you know, they're tight everywhere, and I don't think there's a team better than them right now in the league on paper.
Yeah, the only thing is the offensive line with, you know, they had to make a couple moves. Were you surprised by the release of Diakowski?
I was, because, you know, I think everybody had felt it was kind of a weird move in free agency when they signed Bond. Everybody was saying, well, you know, they could probably slide him off the tackle, but it seems like what they'll do is they'll put him back at guard and they'll continue to search for that tackle that they wanted. But it's weird for them, I think, to have released him so late in the stage. Obviously, you know, teams tend to do that, but a guy like Diakowski, who's a veteran, who I don't think was getting paid a whole lot, was kind of surprising to me.
Going to be eager. I'm eager to see the running back spot. You had Cameron Marshall, who we all liked on the panel. He's the kind of the Swiss Army knife, catch, block, run. But Jerome Messam back here, he's a real difference maker in between the tackles when you need the hard yards. And he'll probably be playing with a chip on his shoulder here and gets a chance to come back to Saskatchewan where it's, you know, he loves it here.
Absolutely. You know, you can say what you want about Jerome Messam, but when he's playing with the chip on his shoulder, I don't think there's more of a dynamic player, because I think people tend to forget he does a decent job of catching the ball in the backfield. You know, he's pretty nifty for a big guy, but like you said, you know, in between the tackles, he can get you those tough yards, and then you got a guy like Cameron Marshall, who's very, very dynamic. You know, Big Pin is a guy who's got so much juice, and he's probably the most, I would say, the explosive out of all the running backs. And then you still, I guess, got a guy like Trent Richardson, who's still kicking around, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that they've done what I think a lot of teams championship winning teams do in off seasons, and they stack up at every position. I know Jim Popp used to do it in our days in Montreal. We were never just, you know, two or three. We always had four deep at anywhere we were at, and that's what you need in order to be able to withstand a long season and make a push at the end of it.
Paul Waldo, a local guy here in Regina, real estate magnate, and he's also a three-time Grey Cup champ with the Alouettes and Rough Riders. I got one more question besides this. Did you ever... jog my memory. Did you ever do training camp with the Riders in Saskatoon yourself?
I did, yeah. Three of the 4 years we did them in Saskatoon,
Did you like Saskatoon, or would you rather have it in Regina?
No, I mean, I love Saskatoon. I think the first year we did it, in 2012, we were here in Regina, and obviously the pro to being able to sleep in your own bed was great, but, you know, the Saskatoon, the facilities are very nice, the auditoriums, the meeting rooms, at the time the field was in better shape too, and I think what it does, it allows you to kind of escape anything else that you have going on at home or in the city, and allows you to really concentrate on football, and like I said, the facilities were great, and it's nice to give the Saskatoon, you know, demographic, the population, the fan base that is so strong there, a chance to come out and spend a week with us. You know, they don't really get it too often. It's not like they can just drive down Albert Street and to watch a game whenever they want. They're avid fans who have also traveled, who travel in on game day and make that trip during the day or whatever it is. So it's pretty cool to spend time with them there.
Paul, so you're also coaching the University of Saskatchewan Huskies. You got dogs breakfast coming up here early part of May,
sure,
and Tony Mandrich is coming into town. I believe it's May the 4th. What's interesting there is you guys do a big deal where you introduce your recruits, and it was quite a healthy class, I believe, of about 43 guys. Just speak on the recruiting class and how you guys did this offseason.
You know, I think much better than the year before. Scotty and those boys have been working diligently and have, you know, been going province to province, you know, across the country, doing their due diligence and trying to get the best talent out there. It's kind of one of those things where you look at the University of Regina Rams, and, you know, they got such a great program, and they've had two really solid years with Coach Bryson in running the helm there. So, you know, it's been tough, obviously, trying to recruit just within the province when you have two teams that are really, really going after it. So we've had the opportunity to kind of go outside the province as well. And it's one of those things where, you know, last year when Scott was in this position, he wasn't, I don't think he was named head coach until
March,
I think,
or something.
February,
yeah.
March or something, yeah. Sometime late, which really put us behind the eight ball. And so he's really, really been able to put his feet in the ground and go. So it's been a great offseason.
Paul, what's been the eye opener for you as a coach?
You know, just being, you know, it's always different, obviously, that, you know, the goggles are different as a player and as a coach, but I think, you know, being able to really relate to different players and different personalities, you can't essentially coach everybody the same way. I think that's obviously been the most eye-opening experience for me. I mean, you know, you have your philosophies and you know, you do things the way you want, but you got to be able to navigate, and you got to be able to talk to people in different ways in order to reach them. And it's all about maximizing their potential. You know, nowadays I've really started to realize, I mean, it's all on the players, right? You can't do much as a coach physically, so you got to make sure you do everything you can to prepare them, right? You really have to make sure that you don't leave any stone unturned, and you put them in the best position to make the plays.
Everybody tells me they like you because of your honesty when they're listening to the Rider broadcast. So I'm going to throw I'm going to throw something at you lastly here, okay?
What does
Paul Waldo need to do better as a coach this year?
I think there's a lot of things I need to do better. I think there's always room for improvement, you know, whether it's, you know, gearing up for an opponent. I think, once again, it's all about putting players in a position to win. And you know, the roster is very thin. We had a lot of injuries last year, and it's not like, you know, it's different college football. You can't just pluck a guy at the practice roster or make a trade. So I think we definitely need to do better. I personally know, and us collectively as a coaching staff, being prepared for all scenarios and all situations where, you know, guys go down and we're ready to play the musical chair situation, especially in the middle of a game. You know, you can prepare during practice, during the week, you know, with your hypotheticals. But we had instances where we had, I think, two or three guys go down at the same position and had to, you know, shuffle a guy from the linebacking core to play defensive back because we didn't have enough bodies. So I know for myself, I definitely gotta have a better vision of making sure that we've covered all bases and all the worst-case scenarios.
Lastly, I know you're a former pro athlete, now a coach, so you don't like excuses, but I'm going to ask you this. How sure. challenging is it for you? You got a young family, you got the real estate job here, and mm-hmm. you're commuting to coach. Just take people behind the scenes. How does the commuting work for you in terms of the time commitment? Like, how often are you yeah. there coaching?
Oh, yeah.
And then how does that affect you? Is it hard on you as a coach?
Sure. I mean, I like anything, I don't – life has never been easy for me anyway, so yeah. I enjoyed the challenge. I did it as a player. I always found a way to exert myself physically, mentally, emotionally. I tend to do the same during the season, but I guess my typical day is, a day one, let's say a Monday, get up, take the little guy to daycare, go to the office, get some work done for a couple hours, and hit the road. It's good. It's great when I'm driving up to Saskatoon because I'm on the phone with home inspectors or mortgage guys or lawyers or whatever the case is with clients. And then once I get to Saskatoon, I kind of shut the phone off and go to work and prep and do all the film prep and get all the depth chart stuff ready to go. And then, hit the field, on the field for about 2.5 hours, and then I hit the road and come back. So I do that 3 times a week. And then, obviously, during the game as well. So it makes for long days, but I'll tell you, as busy as it makes me, it's also my escape, I think, getting a chance to be on the football field. And I got a great crew of coaches. Guys that I'm very familiar with that I've known almost my whole life, the majority of them, and getting a chance to really help these kids out. I mean, I was just like them not that long ago, and I see a bit of myself in each and every one of them in a different way. So it's pretty cool. It's a busy time, but I love it. Wouldn't trade it for anything.
That's awesome, man. And lastly, lots of guys and girls listen to this podcast. They're up and coming yeah. athletes. It's U16 time, U18 time.
Absolutely.
The spring football leagues in Saskatoon and Regina. What's one piece of advice you'd give to the young athlete right now, taking part, yeah. getting ready for another season?
Sure. You either prepared or unprepared. You've either put the time in and the time. No, I think a lot of people think there's some big magical secret to it, and it isn't. You just have to go out there and you have to outwork everybody. I think that's really it. You got to outwork them in the weight room. You got to outwork them, in practice in order to be able to come ready for game time. And I think that's where, people, a lot of days, people want to talk about swagger and confidence. And to me, swagger, and I tell my kids this when I'm coaching, is, when you're able to come out and understand and read the formation and call stuff out, know where you're going to be at, that gives you confidence and therefore gives you swagger. It's all about preparation, and you really got to outwork your opponent, and that'll take you to the promised land, I think.
I love this guy. He helps grow the game. It's Paul Waldo. Paul, once again, working to get a hold of the real estate game.
Give me a buzz at 306-502-5355, or you can email me directly at paul@holmesregina.ca.
This is Growing the Game, brought to you by Mako. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Always a pleasure with you. I've missed you, man. I can't wait to get back on the radio with you.
All right. Love you, brother.
See you, buddy. Love you, too.
And the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want a perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. One of the legends in our game here in Regina, Frank McChrystal, former coach of the Regina Rams, joining me. And Frank, you're back. I tweeted a picture out this week. You were up in the booth for Spring League. Your son Charlie's a head coach, and you're up with Bernie in the booth. How weird is that, my friend?
It's certainly different. Charlie, he tricked Bernie and I. He kept emailing and talking to me every day, which he does anyway. And, we finally gave in and said, yeah, sure. But Bernie and I don't think, and I think Ryan Hall tweeted it too, like, we've never been in the box together. I think the last time Bernie was in the box was sometime in the 80s. And I think I was up once in the 90s in Calgary. So it was really weird. They go, do you want to be on the sideline? I think you should be on the sideline. And I go, I don't think I should be on the sideline, actually. So it was okay.
You looked young there. You had the hat on. You had the Under Armour hoodie. You were sitting up there helping to chart plays and call plays from up there. First of all, how much have you missed the game, Frank? I know you watch it. I know your son's involved in it. But how much have you missed the game? Is this kind of showing you how much you've missed the game?
I don't know. Like, it's the competition you get, like, even with the Spring League, you kind of get thrown back into it a little bit, and you are competitive, and and I suppose turn a little bit to that. And I'm not sure that I don't mind the calmness. Like, it's hard. I can tell you what, Mike, it's hard to go back and just do it casually, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
if
the last time we were doing it, it's pretty intense, you know?
Yeah.
And it was our job, and it was all day. And to come back and do it this way, it takes a little bit of getting used to. But it was fun, and we liked it. And you know, I speak for Bernie, both glad that we did it. Outside of how cold it's been for the first season.
Yeah, no kidding. Frank McChrystal joining us here, Growing the Game podcast. So are you calmer up in the booth? I didn't see arms flailing or anything. I was standing beside your wife, Wendy. I didn't see you guys freaking out too much.
No, I think we were okay. Like, we were fairly calm, you know. But I had a great deal of distance between myself and the official, so that probably helped.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Frank. So you know, you're now back coaching, I guess, high school kids. When's the last time you've coached, you know, pure true high school kids?
I think probably maybe 1982. Probably 1982, 83, something like that. Actually, at McGuigan.
Yeah.
The McGuigan Mustangs were the last high school group that I coached, so it's been quite a while.
So how weird is that for you to coach these guys on the field, you know, younger guys?
Well, it's all kind of the same sorts of things. It's fundamentals, and you have to make sure that you don't get ahead of yourself, and you have to be aware that you know, they you can't take for granted that they know things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if I reflect on that, you know, you can't take for granted that those guys at CIS, you know, knew things either. So it's important to just work the fundamentals. And I also think that these kids need to be, they maybe need a little more loving and mm-hmm. patience than some of the other maybe more elite guys that we would have coached.
Is that the biggest difference, Frank, from 1982 to here, besides maybe your hair and the car you drove and everything like that, is the athletes? Like, just talk about the athlete in 82 to the athlete now in terms of the high school guy you're coaching.
Well, you know, that's a tough question. You know, I'm not sure there's a whole lot of difference, but I think that they're more aware now. They will question more relative to their own health, for example, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a guy gets banged and you go, are you okay? And, you know, I even know in the 70s and 80s, like, you were always okay.
Yeah.
And here I think there's a great deal more awareness by the athlete of caring and looking after himself, at least in those terms. I think they pretty much know a lot of things too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they watch the game, they follow the game, they play the video games, which is a pretty cool thing for them. So they have a pretty good understanding of the game. The other thing that I kind of noticed is that I'm not sure whether it's just that these young guys don't know each other well enough or not yet, but I just would like them to have more fun, you know. They seem to take things seriously, and they're afraid to make mistakes, and I'm not quite sure where that comes from. But, you know, those are just some of my observations in the first, you know, 10 days, 15 days of being.
I want to get to the video game thing in a second, but you touch on it. Why do you think they're scared to make mistakes? Because I know you always preach, because you were my coach, you know, don't be afraid to make a mistake, because if you're afraid to make a mistake, you'll probably make three mistakes. So why do you think they're scared to make mistakes?
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure that I would want to comment on things like the coaching, but I'm just wondering if they get, I just wonder about the critiquing of players as they go through, you know. Like, I think, you know, Mike, you haven't come through the Rams program and, you know, really grounded in people like Gord Curry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like our thing, it was always about the player, always about the guy that was on the field and doing it, and doing something that is much more difficult when you're doing it than when you're just watching it. And, you know, I just wonder if if there's a lot of pressure put on them through parents and or coaches. And, you know, I'm probably opening myself up for some criticism there. But, you know, I just found them not to be having as – I just wish they would have more fun, I guess, is what I want to say.
I think you're right, because I think even, you know, my son, he's not playing this year in the league, but I kind of catch myself, too, giving him the fifth quarter on the way home sometimes. It's because I grew up in football. I've coached football. I've learned from guys like you and Bernie, and sometimes I'm like, okay, so why'd you do this or why'd you do that? And sometimes I have to catch myself, too. I think there is that parent element of it, too, that kind of gets carried away at times. Hey, Frank, speaking of being a parent – you know, we started this interview by talking about how weird it is for you to be upstairs and your son Charlie to be on the sidelines. I was joking with your wife. I remember when I started, Charlie was knee-high to a grasshopper coming out to Scotty Livingstone Field out there in North Regina. Do you have to pinch yourself that your son is down on the sidelines, the head coach, and you're up in the booth?
Well, yeah, it's kind of fun. And that's sort of a thing that we talked about. And he wanted Bernie and I to coach, and so I said, Bernie, go. I'm going to do it. You know, he wants us to coach with him. Bernie says, yeah, okay, let's do it. So yeah, it's a little different. The one thing though that I appreciate is he did really well. He managed the game really well, and he really knows his stuff. And I think that at his age, he's I guess 32 years old now. At his age, he's probably a lot smarter about the game than actually I would have ever been at that age. So, I've been really not just the fact that he's my son, but I've been really impressed at how he manages the game, and actually he's a really good coach. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and he's a good guy too. But how hard were you on Charlie growing up, because you coached him with the Rams, actually. So how hard were you on Charlie? Did you have to take off the coach hat and put on the dad hat? How tough was that?
No, not really. I don't think so. As I said earlier on, I appreciate how difficult it is to play the game, to be on the field and actually play the game. I appreciate, as you would know when you played, that when you first get out there in your first years, the game seems like it's going 100 miles an hour. And then as you start to understand the game and you've played more and have more experience playing, it slows down for you. I think back on it, and I knew that Charlie was in a difficult situation, number one, as a player, with me as his coach, open to criticism, as well as a coach. When we got him to coach, there was some criticism of, nepotism and stuff, but he ended up being a terrific coach and is even better now. So I don't think I was. I think one time he got a 57 in a class, and I called him in and into the office, and he got some pretty good hell there. And one other time he didn't go after a ball. Those are the only two times I remember. Once on the sidelines, he should have had an interception, and I gave it to him, and then he got a 57 in a class. It should have been an easy class too, Mike, so he got hell then.
Okay. Frank, a couple more questions for you. You mentioned video games a few minutes back. How much do you think video games have helped kids understand with their football IQ the way they've, back in the 80s when I was playing, you had Tecmo Bowl, and if you got Bo Jackson and ran a certain way, he couldn't be tackled, but they didn't really have any elaborate plays. Now they take the NFL, team's playbooks and put them on these Madden games, and I really think it helps the kids with their football IQ. How about you?
Oh, absolutely. No question. I mean, back in the day, we had tabletop hockey and Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Were the games, And these guys, I think the thing that's really cool about it, Mike, is not only do they understand the game itself, but they understand the selection of players and the management of the team as a whole. So, where they trade players and they have to understand what they can and can't do, and when they put people into the game, they have to take other people out, and they trade people. They're pretty damn smart, I know I spend a lot of time with. We keep talking about Charlie. I spend a lot of time with Charlie and Charlie's friends, and they're pretty darn smart. The kid that's coordinating the defense on this spring league team, John Atchison, they're pretty darn good, and they have a pretty good understanding of the game, and I think they appreciate you know, the balance that we have to have, especially in this spring league, about making sure everybody plays equal amount of time and so forth. So yeah. I think it's really good.
You must be pretty proud, though. You got your son. We talked about him, so we'll move from him. But you have your buddy up there, Bernie Schmidt. You got Tom McCallum. You got Todd Fuchs. You got Corey Borsa. All the guys that you coached are with you. So that's kind of, does that make you kind of feel kind of for lack of a better word, proud, I guess, Frank? I mean, I often wonder what Gord Curry thought when he saw guys like you and all those guys coach and move on and help. It's a nice tradition to pass down, I guess, is where I'm going. And what I really liked about yesterday is seeing you and Bernie in the booth and knowing what the influence that you've had on so many kids in this city and so many football players and helping so many guys out, that you're back helping another wave out. It's got to be kind of proud. Aren't you kind of proud?
Yeah, I think we both feel really good about it, you know. And neither one of us wanted to be the coordinator, because it's time to pass it on and let those other guys grow and and let them manage and run the thing. You know, we were not only coached those guys that we're coaching with, but there's a number of guys on the other teams that we coached and taught in school and stuff. So it's been pretty good. I mean, I coached the Rams when Kelly Hamilton and Len Antonini played on the Rams. So it's, I think it's rewarding. It makes you feel good. And certainly when you look at what's going on and what they're contributing, I think it certainly is carrying on the Ram tradition and those things that were initiated and inspired by Gord Curry and his life.
Okay, I want to get to two more questions in you before we let you go here. But you had all the time in the world. You're retired now. Hey, Frank,
yeah.
What do you think of the Regina Minor Spring Football League as it is right now? I know the weather has sucked, but other than that, and that Liable Field is unbelievable. What do you think of the whole setup? It's really, I think it's awesome.
I think it's terrific, and what they're doing with the players and giving all the players opportunities to play, you know, equal playing time and stuff. I think it's really, really good, and I thought it's really well run. The Liable Field is unbelievable. Like what a tremendous thing, and you know, I'm going to say this probably makes some people mad, but the university has had a field out there for, I think, since 2004. And they still don't have washrooms.
You know,
and they play like the women's soccer team plays out there. They don't have washrooms. And look at what these guys have and what they've managed to put together. I just think it's a tremendous facility, a tremendous thing, and something that we should all be proud of in our city.
Yeah, for sure. And lastly, Frank, what would Frank McChrystal right now, the wise coach, what would you tell young Frank McChrystal starting out as a coach? If you could give him one piece of advice or write a letter to him as he's embarking on his coaching career, is there something you've learned that you'd like to tell him coming up?
Well, you know, I'm not sure whether this Frank McChrystal would call himself wise yet. But, you know, the thing that maybe others haven't had always is that I had Gord Curry as my coach for 5 years, and I listened intently. I trusted him. I believed him, and the fairness and what he gave to me, and I tried to carry that over with the Ram program. You know, I had a thing when I retired, and a little party and used Marco Rizzi's place at Boston Pizza in Emerald Park. And Gord Curry was out there, and Gord Curry gave me a letter, and in the letter he said he appreciated how we were able to manage to carry on the Ram tradition and keep those things alive. So, like, I really listened and believed in that. So I think that I had a mentor or a taking off point with Gord Curry. I suppose if I could speak to not just young Frank McChrystal, but young coaches, like the one thing that kind of stands out for me, the longer I coached, the more I knew, the more I didn't know. There's still more to learn. There's still more to figure out. And I, you know, you don't always have all the answers, and the more answers you get, the more questions that come as a result. When in doubt, go back to fundamentals and make sure that you're fundamentally sound, and you're fundamentally sound not only technically with the game, but fundamentally sound dealing with people, because people are what make the difference and the whole purpose of the game, whatever it may be.
One of the best around, Frank McChrystal. We're glad guys like him and Bernie Schmidt are back coaching again, even in this small sample size of the Regina Minor Football Spring Football League. Thanks for this, Frank. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
And the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want a perfect, again, better get Mako Collision Repair, 2337th Avenue in Regina. Go see Alan and Joe and their great gang over there. Joining me on the phone is Paul Harrison, a longtime fixture in Regina Minor Football. And one thing that happened just recently, the Regina Thunder had their dinner at the Delta. And Paul was an award winner at that fabulous dinner, which featured the likes of Nick Lewis, Jerome Messam, Brandon Bridge, and the commissioner, Randy Ambrosi. Paul, talk about your award that you received from the Thunder Football Club the other night.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. I was really honored. I was called a little while ago by Len Antonini and told that the RMF and I guess the Thunder had decided to award me with their annual Unsung Hero Award, which is an award that they give out every year, and the Thunder's really good to make room for that in their outstanding fundraising dinner. And it's an award that goes to somebody that the RMF feels has contributed, I guess, to the RMF over the years. And this year, I was very lucky to and honored to be awarded that. And it was a great thrill.
So how long have you been coaching for, Paul? Tell us a bit about your background. Anybody that knows me and my affiliation with CKRM and Harvard Broadcasting knows I work with your dad, Lauren. But what's your affiliation with football? How long have you been working in the football ranks, helping out there?
I think it's 14 years now. 14 years I started quite a while ago. I started with my brother, Greg Harrison, who still coaches with me, and our friend Tim McLeod, who the three of us have traveled together and have coached together every one of those years, except for one. One of those years we split up and were on different teams. So I've been in the RMF for that long. I've also been the last few years with the RMF's High School Spring League as well, which is going on right now, and it involves high school players from all the schools coming together and being evaluated and drafted onto one of four different teams, and then they play a short four games schedule in the spring. I'm currently the running backs coach for the RMF's Team Saskatchewan U16 team, and we had our first tryout session yesterday at Libel Field. So it's been a long, really rewarding affiliation coaching wise.
Now, I want to ask you about why coaching is important to you in a second and what you like about it. But let's talk about the U16. What's the talent look like this year?
It's really, really encouraging. All of the coaches were very, very happy with the talent level and the football IQ level. These kids came out, hadn't been introduced to the playbook in advance because there's so many of them and we're just getting started, and there's many sessions to come. And Campbell Antonini is the head coach, and the kids picked up like sponges on everything that was being taught to them. Of course, the talent is so impressive, and the size of these kids. You remember when you and I would have been in high school, the idea of 200-plus-pound offensive linemen was rare. Now it's the norm at 15 years old.
Yeah, that's amazing. In terms of the size and the competitiveness and the athleticism, the fact they train year round now, where we just kind of went to training camp to get in shape, and also the coaching, guys like you, the coaching was decent back when we played, and there's some names we could talk about, but you guys like you, Paul, have taken a lot of courses, and those courses have been offered to you, and I think that's really helped the development of this sport in our province too.
Well, they're offered, and we've got our elite level coaches, whether it be the Rams or the Riders and so on. They are always available, and that's what's so special is there is always a course, there's always a certification opportunity that's out there, and I think that's fairly new And it's really being stressed, and it's actually being a lot of it's being required more and more. Like now, I know in the RMF, and I think at the high school level, and maybe even at the CIS level, every coach has to get safe contact certification to make sure that at least they're teaching blocking and tackling in a safe manner. But over and above that, the technical training that's available, I think, is fairly unprecedented.
Paul Harrison joining me here, Growing the Game podcast here, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. Paul's been involved with minor football for, going on almost two decades now. Paul, when we're looking at football and coaching football, you mentioned you've coached with your brother and a friend, so I imagine friendship's an attractive thing, too, when it comes to you being involved in this sport.
Yeah. The friendships that have been made over the years are amazing and ongoing, right? You know, you look at Spring League, it's a coaching staff of friends, and all four staffs are like that. When you get into the RMF level, you start off with a core of friends, and then you get to add to that because there's always some dads that want to get involved and some dads with backgrounds, and so you get to know them, and then the circle just grows. And the other great thing is you get to know these kids, and you get to see these kids grow up. I had the good fortune to get invited to be a guest coach at the University of Regina Rams training camp this last summer by a friend, Dwayne Mason, who's the running backs coach and the offensive coordinator at the U18 team. So I get out there and I look at the roster, and there's 12 or 13, I think, kids on the Rams roster that I'd had the chance to coach over the years. So you feel old, but you feel good about it.
Yeah, how proud do you feel old? We're all getting old, Paul. We're not going to beat Father Time. He's undefeated. But how proud do you feel that you played some part in them getting to the elite level of football in this province?
Oh, you feel pride. I don't know how much credit you take for that. If anything, at a young age when you coach them, if you take credit, maybe it's credit that you kept them interested in the game and you kept them liking the game. Because certainly they've gone on to bigger and better things than their time with me.
That's a really good point. I always say that too. As long as you keep the kids wanting to play at the next level, you've done your job, whether you're an Adam, Pee-wee, Bantam, and such. That's a really good point, Paul. You had a nice message at the Thunder dinner, which, by the way, was a great dinner. Sold out affair. Murad Al-Khatib, the president, shook a few people down and got them to buy tickets. It was a sold out affair. It was really nice celebration of junior football. Good to have the commissioner there. But you had a really good message. You said, every parent should give their kid the ability, whether it be boy or girl, give them the ability and opportunity to try RMF. RMF. It was a powerful statement. Why do you believe that?
Well, I think that because I look at my own two kids. My oldest son, Luke, is 18. He's graduating from Leboldus. My youngest son, Mark, is 16. He's in grade 10 at Leboldus. The RMF has done far more for me than I'll ever do for them because of what they've done for those two kids of mine. They both played 5 years of RMF football. Luke played 2 years in the high school spring league. Mark is in the high school spring league right now. And as I said at the dinner, neither of my two kids will ever play a down of football after they leave high school. But because of the RMF, they will always be football players. It was the best extracurricular activity they've ever experienced.
Do you think you'll keep coaching once your kids are done football?
Yes, because I haven't actually coached them, at least at the RMF level, now for 2 or 3 years. They've moved on. Mm-hmm. I do get to hook up with them again in spring league, but at the RMF level, they've been away from me for a while. So I hope so.
Hey, we've had a common theme in this podcast because earlier I was talking to Frank McChrystal about the Spring League because he's coaching with his son Charlie, which he said is interesting and weird at the same time. With the Spring League, what I find interesting about it, because I've coached in it too, is back in the day it used to be the South End Cake Eaters, or you don't want to live north of Dewdney, or Sheldon guys are weak. I'm just throwing stereotype statements out there. But what's cool about the Spring League is Sheldon guys could play with Riffle guys, could play with O'Neill guys, could play with Luther guys, and they all come together in a melting pot and get to know the kids. I think that's kind of cool.
It's great. My team this year in Spring League is made up of kids from 17 different schools. So that's every 4A school, every 3A school in Regina. Plus, we've got Southie, we've got two from Moose Jaw, and we've got Lumsden as well. So talk about a melting pot. Yeah. We've got 12-man players, we've got 9-man players, and I think we've got a 6-man player.
Do you find that challenging in terms of, I know the kids know football, but they're used to playing 6 and 9-man to find, you know, try to change their mentality to go into a 12-man game?
Yeah, that's challenging, and just the fact that the terminology is different. I'm not sure why football can't standardize it better than it does, but the same thing has multiple different names, and we find that among our coaching staff, right?
Yeah,
it's not just right or left; it's red and blue, and Roger and Louie, and all kinds of things. So the kids experience that as well.
Okay, and lastly, rewind this conversation to something you said earlier about the kids coming in, for instance, in U16 and soaking things up. How much do you think video games, John Madden's football video game and other video games, have helped them not only stay interested in football, but pick up on terminology and plays and things like that? Because back when we played, I was talking to Frank about this earlier on this podcast. We used to have Tecmo Bowl, right, Paul, where you had Bo Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
If you got Bo Jackson and you ran a certain angle, you could never tackle him. But the plays weren't really on the screen, and you didn't really get it wasn't obviously in HD. Now you got the playbook, and everybody could see it. How much do you think video games have helped kids soak up football fast?
It's huge. That's an excellent point, and it's a very valid point. Anybody who criticizes video games from a football perspective is dead wrong. Go on Madden and open it up and look at the way that they present the offensive and defensive systems. I remember when my oldest son was playing on the South Sask Selects team as a young kid, one of his coaches, and I can't remember who it was, made an actual point of telling these kids, play Madden this weekend because it is so technically correct and so intricate from a systems perspective that the kids soak it in. I mean, today, it goes beyond video games. For instance, one of my coaches in Spring League, Rick Seaman, longtime Rams coach, passed on to me this morning a homework assignment that he wants our receiver group to look at. And it's all video linked to film on YouTube and so on. It's just so handy and so quick.
Okay, so lastly, I like talking to guys like you in this podcast because we're trying to grow the game, and you do it for the love of the game. You're a lawyer that gives up his time and does it even when he's not coaching his own kid. So, you know, no wonder you got the Unsung Hero Award, and definitely well-deserving of that award. But I want to ask you in closing, what do you hope for the sport of football in the next 5 to 10 years to come? Because it's taken a couple of hits here over the last little while. What do you hope for the sport of football?
I just hope it weathers the storm. I think that's the biggest thing. Right now, you turn around and you see all kinds of articles about the tackle football being banned in various parts of North America. I think it just needs to weather the storm and get past a lot of negative attention. There's never been more focus on safety in the game, improving equipment, improving tackling, blocking, and the attitudes towards tackling and blocking. So I think as long as it weathers that storm, it's going to be fine.
That's Paul Harrison, one of the great coaches here in Regina and Saskatchewan, helping to grow this game we love of football. Thanks for this, Paul.
Thank you.